Texas greeting. Yeah, you are just so excited. You stayed up too long. You're yawning. I'm going to start calling you at about midnight, since I know you're up anyway. Only the preacher can be up till 3 on a Saturday night. And that's because he's studying, or because these kids are playing video games or something. We have a lot of classes that are being set up right now for the small home group Bible studies. We have, we're going to be having one during the day on Monday. Tuesday we'll have at least 3. Monday evening there'll be one. Also on Wednesday we'll have one in the daytime. We still have classes here in the evening on Wednesday. Thursday is going to have a couple studies, one I believe during the day, one in the evening. Friday is actually going to be having 3 studies on Friday evenings, from Harrisburg down to Reeves, and soon to be over at the Deitches, as they write me back, let me know those dates, on the historicity of Christianity in the world culture. So we have a number of classes that will be starting. I've contacted some already. I'll be contacting others. Don't pass up your opportunity to be able to be in a 6-week class. I also want to make mention to you that the elders gave the blessing to go ahead and start what we were going to do a few years ago. We'll go ahead and do now a preacher training through Sunset Extension Course, and we'll also have a track set up for the missions training. And so if you want to be involved with that, if you want to be a preacher, be involved in the ministry, if you want to be involved in mission work, or if you just want to audit some of those courses, we're going to have those here. And just come up to me, let me know after. It'd be a great opportunity for you to be involved in the kingdom of God without having to leave this location. And tomorrow in this country, we are going to be celebrating Labor Day. And this day tends to mark the end of summer, the beginning of football season. Go Eagles, right? Is that what you want me to say? Yeah. Steelers. Now I'm a politician, aren't I? We'll call them Steagles. How's that? And it's also a time of great barbecue. The history of this day, though, is rather interesting. Had its origin in Canada in the 1870s. Had to do with labor disputes between the government and the unions. And they would celebrate the labor reforms that they had, because the working conditions used to be far worse than they are today. I mean, it was nothing to throw a 12-year-old near some kind of press machine. Nobody even thought anything else of it. So when I'm using the term unions, I use them in the context of how they were originally formed. I mean, there were horrendous working conditions, and not much mercy given from industry toward the common labor. And so in Canada, when they had a day where they would celebrate the remarkable strides they had for the working conditions by having a day off, they'd have a parade, a lot of speakers would come in, and somebody saw that in Canada, and they brought it to the U.S. It was first celebrated on September 5th, 1882 in New York City, and it was without government recognition at that time. Well, as a result, 2 years later, there was a Pullman strike, 1894, and the military clashed with the union, and a bunch of people died. And 6 days after that event, President Grover Cleveland, in a gesture of appeasement, started the movement which was called Labor Day. And throughout the course of time, Labor Day has become a national day of rest for those who labor or work. And it's called Labor Day because it recognizes the hard labor that people have. You ever notice the word job looks a lot like the word Job? I wonder if that's just a coincidence. I don't know. But working hard is hard work, isn't it? And so we have this day in our nation tomorrow where you just relax. And that's where it comes from. Now, in light of this, I desire to enter into the conversation that the fact that there will be some tomorrow that will not be able to take that meaning into that day because they are sluggards. Now, what is a sluggard? Well, the definition of a sluggard is very simply a habitually lazy person. It's one who, by habit and practice, has mastered the art of nothing. Okay? And the sluggard, he can't celebrate the, quote, day of rest from his labors because there's no labor to rest from. If someone has chosen the life to live that life of a sluggard, Labor Day is just another day to them. In fact, technically, the sluggard can only celebrate Labor Day by going out and working because that'd be different than what they had before. And now the world is expected to have sluggards. You can find lazy people all over the place. For where the world is, there the sin shall follow. And being a sluggard is a sin. If someone, is in the church, though, it's a different situation. God has called us to a higher calling. We are people of action, not inaction. We're a people who work hard, not a people who are sluggards. And it's important to identify the sin of being a sluggard so as to not allow it to come into the church. Because if someone's lazy in their work and then they come into the church, it affects every part of their life and the lives of others, whether it be worship, whether it be just doing general work in the church, fellowship. Because if you're lazy in the area that provides food for the table, well, you'll be lazy in a lot of areas. Just like if you were a drunkard and you come into the church, you need to deal with the drunkenness. Otherwise, it'll affect every area of your life. And the church can't tolerate sluggardism. And this was a problem in the first century church, by the way. 2 Thessalonians 3:10 through 12, the verse that Brother Howard read, even when we were with you, we used to give you this order that if you're not willing to work, neither shall you eat. It didn't say not able to work. There's a difference between being able to work and willing to work. You know, if somebody's handicapped, you know, they're less likely. You know, if they're paralyzed from the neck down, there's not a whole lot they can do. And the church has a responsibility to help people who cannot help themselves. But if they're not willing to help themselves, then the church needs to deal with that. And that's what Paul was dealing with. Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, do work heartily as for the Lord rather than man. Because when you're working, you're working with God watching you. You need to work hard. Paul would tell Timothy in 5 verse 8, but if anyone does not provide for his own, especially those of his own household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Worse than an unbeliever. Now, how could that be? Well, because the unbeliever even knows what life teaches you. If you work hard, you'll be better off. If you don't work, well, then you're not going to be better off. If you won't take care of your own family, if you're in or out of the church, I mean, that's why God blesses us with that family. We in the church are always to teach others to be hard workers, for it is in this way that we will be defined. If you're lazy on your job, you could be lazy in all these other areas too. So With that thought in mind, tomorrow, as you celebrate Labor Day, if you've been working hard, well then, relax. Invite the preacher over for a T-bone or something. You could do that. No, actually, we'll be grilling. I got a new grill as a gift. My wife got it for me as a gift for our anniversary, which comes up in November. I got an entire mop set for her. No. No. No, we're cooking with that grill there. But I want you to be able to identify a lazy soul when you see one. Because there's a difference, you know, there's habitually lazy, and then sometimes you're just feeling lazy. You just want to lay around. Somebody asked Justin. Justin's staying at my place this weekend and got a picture of him yawning in class. I guess Tim asked him later. He said, "You look kind of tired." And he said, "Well, those Hamiltons don't sleep much." Yeah. Anyway, five signs of a lazy soul. We're going to use sluggard verses. So you can identify a lazy soul when you see one. Five signs, and then you can help correct that behavior. Number one, there's a cycle of poverty. A cycle of poverty. In Proverbs 6:6-11, you can look at that. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 6 through 11. Okay, when I pause, that means you can open your Bibles up to it. Okay, I'll take for granted that you have it open there. "Go to the ant, O sluggard. Observe her ways and be wise, which having no chief, officer, or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep?" A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. "Your poverty will come upon you like a vagabond, and your need like an armed man." In Proverbs 13:4, another sluggard, "The soul of a sluggard craves and gets nothing, but the soul of the diligent is made fat." You see, I cannot count the number of times lazy people have contacted the church family in search of funds. Doesn't matter where you go in the country. If you're a minister or you're involved in benevolence, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. There's nothing wrong with being benevolent, for the Bible teaches this. We're commanded to be benevolent. And we want to be benevolent. But I'm not saying that everyone who needs assistance is lazy, because that's absolutely not true. But I can tell you this much, there's a lot of lazy people who've called the church over the years. Paul's a lot more tender-hearted than I am. Don't let that tough exterior fool you. You don't want Paul in charge of benevolence. He's a softy. You want someone that's tougher like that. And so Paul, whenever there's a hard one, Paul, somehow they magically get my number. Paul gives them my number to screen out. But I don't know if it's because I just got burned out on it. But I can spy a lazy person pretty quick. And I've had so many calls before. And once you help somebody, the danger is if you help a lazy person, you're going to have 10 other lazy people calling you. I promise you. Isn't that true, Paul? All you have to do is give a lazy person something, and they know a bunch of other lazy people, and they're going to tell the other lazy people where to get lazy funds. It's happened like that numerous times. You know, we're more than happy to aid a soul in need, especially for those of the church family, and our record confirms this. We will not aid someone who's in the way of laziness. On the form we have downstairs, I came up with a form in Osceola, and we have it here now. On the form for benevolence, if somebody's from the outside and they're requesting something, right on the form, we have written on there questions like, where do you work? How long have you worked there? And so we're going to know if they have a work history, contact numbers. Because if somebody's down on their luck, if somebody's just going through a tough time, we want to be able to help them. But if they have a habit of not working, we're going to know pretty quick. And by the way, usually the category that comes up is painter or something. But there was this man that I had that came to the church in Osceola. Jana had given me a call one day, and he was looking for a place called home. He'd been traveling around, and he needed someone to put him up for the night and a meal. So he was at the payphone. I went to go meet him at the Quick Trip. And he was a man who had not missed meals. He was at least 500 pounds. And he said he didn't eat that day, but he wanted to know if we could put him up in a hotel. He's traveling through, gave me this lame excuse. And what had happened was, when I filled out that document we have, I mean, you'd have a better chance of becoming a CIA member than being lazy and getting through that form. Trust me. But if you're not lazy and you're in need, then you'll pass right through it. Well, I came to the part about the job. He was my age, and at the time I was 37. He was my age. He was from Connecticut, and he hadn't worked in over 5 years. And I said, what have you been doing for 5 years? He said, I've been traveling around looking for a place called home. I said, what all is that involved? Well, churches pay for a hotel room here, or they buy me a meal there. For 5 years, the man had traveled around and fed like a king and put in rooms. We had this arrangement with this local Indian family who owned this little hotel on this other side of the tracks. It was the one that should have probably been tore down, but they painted it yellow and put new sheets on the beds. It wasn't a good shape hotel, but it was where, I had a deal worked out with them for sluggards. They had a room for $11 a night. It was rough. It was a hard room. It was the type of room that made you appreciate camping. He said, well, I offered him a job. I called an older man in the congregation. I said, well, do you have anything he could do for you tomorrow? He said, absolutely. I got a wall that needs painted. I said, okay. I did tell the man, I said, you're a sluggard. And I'll help you, though. So we went down to that hotel, and he was kind of creeped out by it. And I said, hey, you got the key? He said, yes, I have the key. I took the key and went down to the room, gave him the $11. I said, here's where you're staying tonight. And tomorrow you're going to work. And if you do a good job, we'll help you get into a better room. And we'll help you find a place called home, but we're going to help you find a lifestyle called work. He didn't like that. That was a four-letter word he did not want to hear. And he opened the door. I still remember the creaking of the door. They purposely did not oil the hinges on that door. I wanted it just right. And it really wasn't a room, I don't think. I think it was a storage facility. They built a little bathroom on the side. But he opened the door, and he looked in, and he says, where's the TV? I said, sluggers get no TV. He walked to the bathroom, and they had, like, the type of towels you'd wet sand with. He said, "Where's the Brathmans?" He said, "What time do they serve breakfast?" I said, "I'll pick you up tomorrow at 8 o'clock, and I'll take you down to Hardee's. But then you're going to paint." Well, it had a pull-out couch, too. Kind you pulled out. You're kind of scared what came out with it. Well, I showed up purposely at 7:30 that next morning. Because he said, "Why are you doing this?" I said, "Look at my face." See, when I do this, I want him to look. Don't look. I said, "Don't look." I said, "I want, no matter where you go in the future, until you break this habit, the next church you rip off or the next community you want to call home and have somebody stay, look at the face. I want you to see this. You are a sluggard. I want you to have my face burned in your head, because this is not the way you need to go. But I will help you get out of it." I showed up at 7:30 in the morning, him knowing I was going to pick him up at 8. My Indian friend told me he left at 7. He had already moved on. But see, there's an endless cycle of poverty for the lazy person. You're never going to get ahead. If you have no plan to work hard, you're going to be worked hard when poverty comes your way. It will come on you like an armed man. Number two, lack of a life plan. Lack of a life plan. Proverbs 20, verse 4, "The sluggard does not plow after the autumn, so he begs during the harvest and has nothing." Proverbs 26, 14, "As the door turns on its hinges, so does the sluggard turn on his bed." And Proverbs 26, 16, "The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than 7 men who can give a discreet answer." Often the sluggard fails to have a life plan because that requires effort. He or she will not listen to the instruction of those who can aid them in escaping that way of life. There's a saying, if you teach a man to fish, or if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. But if you teach a man to fish, you will feed him for life. The sluggard only wants the skill of taking the fish, but not learning to fish. They lack a worthy life plan, and just like a door that moves on its hinges back and forth, their horizon is no farther than that. Than a door swinging on a hinge. That's their life plan. The back and forth, drifting through life, ideal of a sluggard. They have no plans of the immediate. And see, if you're not sure somebody might be a sluggard, just ask them, "What's your plan?" If they're a lazy person, habitually lazy, "I don't know. I'm just going to do nothing, I guess." That's a sign that they may be a lazy person. But then there's endless excuses, the third one. Endless excuses. Proverbs 23:13, "The sluggard says, 'There's a lion outside. I will be killed in the streets.'" 26:13 and 14, sluggard said, "There's a lion in the road, a lion in the open square." Proverbs 15:19, the way of the lazy is a hedge of thorns, but the path of the upright is a highway. A sluggard will think of any excuse to get out of work. This particular sluggard mentioned in Proverbs, he was using the old ancient excuse, "That's too dangerous to go outside. I can't go out and work. There might be a lion outside." Another one, when it talks about the hedge of thorns, their way of life has boxed them in, and they will use any excuse not to work. Growing up in a rural area provided a large amount of farm work where I grew up at. And oftentimes I would organize crews for picking rock, baling hay, walking beans, detasseling corn. There's just a lot of different things you can do. You can make some good money. But it was hard work. And every now and then, we'd accidentally hire a sluggard. We didn't know who they were. And, oh, yeah, I could do that. Oh, I could learn. And it's like it'd take about a couple of days. And let me tell you, if everybody's supposed to pull their own load, you realize how hard a sluggard is when you're on a farm work crew. They'll give you every excuse you can imagine. It's too hot. It's too heavy. They'll say, I'm allergic to bees, was one I heard. Well, I'm allergic to them too. I swell up every time I get stung by one. But that doesn't mean I won't go out and do something. Another one is, I got blisters, or my feet hurt, or my alarm didn't go off. Farm work was not for the lazy individual, and you'd weed them out in a couple days. If you don't do the work, you don't get paid. Sluggards oftentimes will find excuses. You'll ask them, how come you haven't worked? Why aren't you working? And they'll say, well, and they'll give you this long list of reasons why they couldn't work, when really they could have. I'm not talking about the ones who can't work. I'm talking about the ones that aren't willing to work. There's a big difference there. They also have, number four, demands on the righteous. Demands on the righteous. Proverbs 10:26, like vinegar is to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the lazy one to those who send him. Proverbs 21:25-26 says, the desire of the sluggard puts him to death, for his hands refuse to work. All day long he is craving, while the righteous gives and does not hold back. A number of years ago, there was a woman who called this congregation. I had my office at the back of the building there, and I was only here probably for about 6 months at the time, and there was a lady who called and said that she wanted us to make a house payment for her. She wasn't a member of the congregation. I didn't know who she was. And I told her that we have a policy where we don't make house payments for people we don't know like that. That's not in our policy. And she demanded me that we had to pay it. And in fact, she said, quote, if you don't make my house payment, I will kill myself. She threatened her life on the phone to me. Now, I preach funerals. Is that what she was going toward? No, she was trying to strong arm me into feeling bad if we didn't pay some. And I told her, I said, we're not going to do that. She was a sluggard. She wasn't working like she should have been. And it caught up to her. She yelled at me, you're a minister and you're supposed to help me. I said, I'm helping you right now. You don't make demands on the righteous. You do not make demands on the righteous. By the way, it was very interesting. That particular lady got picked up 4 months later by the police for running the same scam on 10 churches throughout our area. She was in a scam. She didn't want to work. Anyone that's ever worked with the outside benevolence, you know that there's a mindset that the sluggard thinks you have an obligation to help them. You do not have an obligation to help a lazy person. Never. When you help a lazy person, you enable sin to get worse. You help needy people. You don't help people who are lazy. Number five, personal neglect. Proverbs 24, verses 30 through 34. I passed by the field of a sluggard. This is Proverbs 24, 30 and 34. And by the vineyard of the man lacking sense, and behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Its surface was covered with nettles. Its stone wall was broken down. When I saw, I reflected upon it. I looked and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. then your poverty will come upon you as a robber, and your want like an armed man. Proverbs 26:15, the sluggard buries his hand in the dish, and he's weary of bringing it to his mouth again. This sluggard allowed his home to fall into a dilapidated condition through his neglect. The other sluggard even finds it annoying that he has to bring the food to his face. Personal neglect is a sign of advanced sluggardism. Have you ever met a person so lazy they do not bathe or groom themselves? I've met many. Janet and I met a lady so lazy one time. I was in shock with how, you know who we're talking about, right? Yeah. Not here, so don't say, who is it in here? It's not, no, this is in Iowa. She had a pile of trash 3 foot high in her house. Her kids personally had lice 3 or 4 times a year. They'd have to be sent home from school. I mean, it was bad. Okay, group heave. No. It was horrible. Jana went over to help this lady. She wasn't in the church. We were trying to reach out to her, and she had a surgery. Jana took cookies over for her. And she came back, and I was typing on the computer, and she walked in the room, and I about gagged. I said, what is that smell? She said, you will not believe what happened. This lady had pets that died, and she couldn't find where they were. Yeah. And I said, you got to be kidding me. She was so lazy, she wouldn't even clean her kids. She had like a tub that had like black water in it. It looked like a guitar road. It was awful. But she was a sluggard. She was taught to be a sluggard by her parents, and she probably had mental illness besides. But let me tell you, there are people out there who get so lazy that they will personally neglect themselves. And that's a sign. You know, when you drive by a yard, like the Yoders, and it's all kept up. No. You know, Paul has an old car collection there. But he lives way out in the country, though. But when you drive by somebody's yard, and it's like manicured, or their house is clean, do you know that it takes a lot of work to do those things? It takes a bunch of work to keep a house clean. Because all you have to do is don't clean your house for a week and watch what happens. You constantly are picking it up. Constantly. That alone is work, but if you're extremely lazy in an area of your life, it will carry over into others, including personal neglect. So there you have 5 ways to identify a true sluggard according to the Bible. We have to be careful not to encourage this way of life, for it is damaging to society. Most importantly, a sluggard has to understand that there's no laziness in the kingdom of God. It should be treated as a sin, just like every other sin that one brings in. And so, tomorrow, if you're working hard, enjoy tomorrow. Do that. If you're working hard, you deserve a break. If you don't have anywhere to go, we're going to be cooking at our place on that new grill that my wife got me. Have a good time. But if you know someone who's lazy and not working hard, you need to encourage them to change that part of their life. It could take a long time, but you need to change that. Help them. How many here have ever heard of subsidies for farmers? Raise your hand. Okay. So you'll be very familiar with it. Subsidies are when they paid the farmers to not do something, to not plant some corn or raise hogs. And always kind of, I don't know, seems kind of lazy, doesn't it? I will pay you not to do something. Well, in the closing story this morning, I want to tell you about an actual letter that was written in the mid-1980s from a Midwestern man to the Secretary of Agriculture. And this is what it says. From the desk of Don General to the Honorable Secretary of the Agriculture, Washington, D.C. Dear sir, my name is Dan Hansen. Over at Honey Creek, Iowa, he says, my friend Don Hansen over at Honey Creek, Iowa, received a check for $1,000 from the government for not raising hogs. So I want to go into the not raising hogs business next year. And what I want to know is this. In your opinion, what is the best kind of farm not to raise hogs on? And what is the best breed of hogs not to raise? I want to be sure I approach this endeavor in keeping with all the government policies. As I see it, the hardest part in not raising hogs program is keeping an accurate inventory of how many hogs I do not raise. My friend Hansen is very joyful about the future of the business. He has been raising hogs for 20 years or so, and the best he's ever made was $422.68 in 1968. Until this year when he got your check for $1,000 for not raising 50 hogs. If I get $1,000 for not raising 50 hogs, then would I get $2,000 for not raising 100 hogs? I plan to operate on a small scale at first, holding myself to about 4,000 hogs not raised in the first year, which would bring in about $80,000. Then I can afford an airplane. Another thing, these hogs I will not raise will not eat 1,000 bushels of corn. I understand that the government also pays people to not raise corn and wheat. Would I qualify for payments for not raising these crops, not to feed my not hogs? I want to get started as soon as possible, as it seems to be a good time of the year for not raising hogs and not planting crops business. Also, I am giving serious consideration to the not milking cows business, and any information you have on this endeavor will be greatly appreciated. In view of this fact, I will be totally unemployed. I will be filing for unemployment and food stamps and was wondering how long that process takes. Be assured, Mr. Secretary, you will have my vote in the upcoming election. Patriotically yours, Don General. P.S. Will they be starting the free cheese giveaway again? You see, we have to be of the mindset that we're going to just work hard. God gave us a heart that beats, hands that move, minds that think. We all have the same amount of time in a day. I checked. And we all could be working hard, not only on our jobs, but also in our relationships, and also in what we do in the church. Now, I'm going to give you this challenge. Here's how I'd like you to respond to the invitation. If you haven't been part of a small home group Bible study, that's part of the work of the church. One of the ways you can respond is after church. Respond by signing up for one, talking to me. It brings me great joy and the elders a great joy if you would sign up for a study and get to know your brothers and sisters in Christ on that level. And also, if you haven't become a Christian, you need to. If you realize that you haven't repented, confessed, and entered the covenant of Christ through baptism, you need to. And if for any reason at all you're hurting and you need the prayers of your brothers or sisters, we offer this invitation for you at this time. Will you come forward while we stand and sing?